All right, let's check in with Director of Alabama Marine Resources and talk more about this. Scott Bannon now on with us here at FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Sean. How are you guys today?
We're good. I want to talk about we had a meeting last night. That was a Wednesday night meeting, and this is causing a lot of people to call in, check in with our Facebook page about proposed changes and regulations here for fishing, for speckled trout and flounder here in Alabama.
Yes, flounder and speckled trout are two of our favorite fish to go after here. And so we're looking at some of our stock assessments and spotted sea trout or specks. We have some concern for them, but the flounder are really in bad shape, and we need to make some tough decisions about the management of those fish going forward. And so we've been having meetings with private anglers, commercial fishermen, because flounder has a commercial aspect, and we're going to have meetings with inshore fishing guides, all the different user groups that participate in these fisheries, because we have some flexibility in what management tools we use to continue to conserve these fish.
Just lost you for a second there on the cell. So you said you had a couple different tools to be able to use?
Yes, we have some different management options, like the size limit. We can do slot limit, changing bag limit. So there's some different options on the table.
Okay, so first of all, we'll deal with these separately. First of all, let's start flounder. That's good. We'll start with flounder. The concern is what? Is the science lining up with what we've, you know, anglers have noticed, that finding a flounder is a hard thing to do?
Yes. Anecdotally, you know, from especially private anglers, it has been very tough to find flounder. The guys that gig, they do better, but they're still having some challenges. Our commercial landings are down. Our recreational landings are down. So this is, it's not just us here in Alabama. The whole Gulf Coast is kind of having some challenges with flounder. So we're all trying to decide what is a good path forward on this. But doing nothing is not the answer right now.
Okay. I want to talk about the path forward in a second, but I want to look in that rear view, because, you know, I've got you on the show, and I got to ask you, is this any science out there showing that this is the flounder numbers being down a result of the oil spill? Because that's what a lot of people have said, you know, hey, it was post-oil spill that we had reduced numbers of flounder.
Well, the numbers really started changing a little bit before then. We have some time series that we look at. I'm not saying that it didn't have some effect. You know, there was naturally some environmental damage due to that. There may be some other environmental factors. And what I've discussed with the public is, if we make some changes and in 3 to 5 years we're not seeing some positive change, it's not necessarily the harvest, then it can be environmental conditions that we're experiencing that are affecting things like oysters, some low oxygen levels, flow patterns are different. The amount of effort for fishing in the inshore industry is tremendous. We have numbers from the 90s to the 2000s that it's 10 times the number. It went from 50,000 trips to 500,000 trips. So there are a lot of people out there enjoying the fisheries in Alabama.
It went from what? From the 90s to now? What was the ratio? What, from what to what?
From around 55,000 trips to 500,000 trips.
Holy cow. And I think there's a couple things going on here. I mean, number one, there's a natural progression towards that, just the way people became more interested in inshore fishing. But at the same time, you gotta at least look at the idea with closures on snapper and limiting people for that fishery. Some of that pressure had to move somewhere else.
It is. We call it effort shift. When one fishery is not available, people move their efforts to other fisheries. They like to fish. Fishing is a way of life in South Alabama. And so we do realize there is an impact from that. So the more fisheries that are open and available, people get the opportunities to pick and choose which one they participate in. And now with the boats, that these inshore boats can run offshore, so a lot of people have changed the type of boats they're using. So they are participating in as many fisheries as possible.
But you're saying, so while limits, and there has been change on limits because we're talking flounder here, but yeah, it's you know, you can have limits set, but it's really how many people attempt to go catch that fish. I mean, you could have a limit set at whatever, but if there's only 17 people chasing that critter, then it's not a big deal, or versus, you know, 500 people chasing that critter.
That's correct. And, you know, we don't see the recreational angler getting a bag limit of flounder, which is 10 per person, almost never. That's a rare occurrence, except for guys that use the gig. and that are good and that are very knowledgeable about how that fishery works, they have great opportunities, but it's still harder for them.
Okay, so what we're talking about, flounder and proposed changes, what is your thought? What do you want to do with the flounder regulations?
Well, right now, I'm willing to make some pretty tough decisions on flounder, and I think we need to look at an adjustment to the size limit. Recreationally, I don't know if adjusting the bag limit really makes any difference. If you're not catching them...
getting a limit, what does it matter?
What does it matter? And I hear loud and clear from the public that once something is taken away, it is very difficult to give it back, and mm-hmm. that is true. So I have a little bit of reluctance about changing the bag limit, but there is some support from people to do that. And then the other aspect is there is not a trip limit for the commercial fishery. So we're not trying to eliminate jobs or opportunities for people to make money, but I think we need to look really hard at whether we institute a trip limit for that. And we're also talking about a season closure as a possibility for both recreational and commercial anglers for 1 month. The month of November happens to be the month that those fish make their way out into the Gulf and they are spawning. So it's a migration pattern for them. If we can leave them alone for that 1 month, we think there's a huge biological impact on letting those females get out there and spawn.
Okay, you mentioned commercials, so I gotta take this, and I know you're tasked with private anglers and commercial fishermen, over Alabama Marine Resources. So I get that. I get where you're coming from, and I'm going to tell you right now. You know where I come from, the private angler side. The economic impact. If we're looking at trying to protect a resource and that resource is, held in the public trust, the economic impact, it has to be higher to me in a recreational than a commercial.
There is some argument for that. And here's what I tell people about economic impact is I'm a pro-job and pro-the economy type person. And so all aspects of our fisheries, commercial, recreational, and charter, all have some impact to the economy. So if possible, we want to make decisions that continue to allow all of those people to participate in the fishery and have a positive economic impact.
Okay. So, you got to look at it the whole, right? You have the whole biomass of flounder or speckled trout in this and how, let's say flounder because there's a commercial aspect, how that's apportioned, right? Who gets to take what? I mean, that's your job.
Yes. And we don't apportion it by user groups like the red snapper industry and some things, or the fishery does. So we just look at it as what is the fishery, what is the stock assessment showing us, and what are the participants, and what is their take? What are they taking away from the fishery? At the end of the day, it's dead fish. How many dead fish are coming out of the system?
All right. So these meetings like the one that happened last night, and that's where you're talking about this, hearing back from anglers. What are you hearing?
Well, we see a lot of support, believe it or not, for some bag limit changes, which I have some concerns with just because it may be tough to give it back to you. But people are very concerned about these two fisheries, so they're supporting some change. And everybody has a different view on which one of the changes is best. We will finish the meetings. We have a Charter for Hire meeting coming up on March the 27th. That's the last segment we haven't had a one-on-one discussion with. And our staff will sit down, we'll look at the options, and I will compile the feedback, and we'll look at what we think gives us the best biological rebound and what still keeps people participating in the fishery that they feel comfortable with. Nobody's going to be completely happy at the end of the day. We understand that, but we have a lot of people that really understand that there needs to be some change if we're going to continue to fish. And the goal is, as I tell people, my goal is to make fishing better for your children than it is for you. And I think we can head that way.
All right. Just joining us, talking to Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, about these discussion of proposed changes for flounder and speckled trout. And Mike Ward has walked in the studio as well.
How you doing, Scott?
Good. How are you, Mike?
Doing good.
Yeah. So we're talking about this idea. Number one, you said, okay, on flounder, I want to finish up flounder, then we'll go to trout. But with flounder, the proposed size change would be to what?
We have a couple of options on the table. Right now we're at a 12-inch minimum length, and we could go to a 13, 14, or 15, and we have some numbers that show what the impact to the fishery is if you move up those numbers. 15 is a big push, but it has a huge impact. 14 would be somewhere in the middle. a bag limit change, again, like I said, doesn't make much difference. But a commercial trip limit and possibly a season closure for both user groups to the fishery with a minimal impact to the people that get to participate. It's a 1 month closure.
All right, so that closure in November. Now let's move on to speckled trout. And what issues are facing speckled trout, in your opinion, and how do you propose dealing with those?
So with the trout, what we call the spawning potential ratio is down. That means we're not putting enough babies back in the system. So it's not in bad shape. It's just time for us to take a look at it because we have some concerns. So I don't think we need to make as big a change in the speckled trout fishery. Possibly a slot limit has a lot of support from anglers. You let some of those bigger females go, they have a lot more eggs. A big 24-inch trout as opposed to like a 14-inch trout, she has about five times the number of eggs. But if we move that bottom end up, it lets a lot more females stay in the system. And the goal is that if you move that minimum size limit up, that eventually that becomes your new norm, that you're okay. These are now, quote, small trout at 15 inches or 16 inches because you're catching a lot of them that size or bigger. So a lot of support for moving that bottom end up and surprising the support for a slot limit. If we were to do a slot limit, we would allow a trophy fish, let you get a lunker, let you get one to take home to show the neighbors.
You know, Scott, this is something when you joined me a couple of weeks ago on the midday show, we talked about, and I think I'm not on everybody's boat, and I know there's some people that don't do this, but among my peer group, we kind of have instituted something very similar, but that's where I get into the lower limit. Like the idea of turning big female trout back, it's something's been happening on my boat for a long time. Unless somebody's going to mount the fish, let's get a picture of it, let's get her back, because I see her as a egg-laying machine. Also, maybe it's just the size of the skillets at my house that 14, 15, 16, 17, 18-inch trout fillet fits a lot better in there, and that's kind of what we keep for meat. So, I mean, it's the idea of – but you're saying it's important on the bottom end, too, because, what, just the recruitment of females to get them bigger? Or, I mean
– That's correct. The number of females that you will release at that lower end, if you move the size limit up to like a 15 or 16-inch fish, you leave a lot more fish in the system with the anticipation that you now will have more fish down the road in the system and you'll get to more bigger fish down the road. And so you keep your bag limit where it is, even though there's been a lot more support than I would have thought for a reduction in the bag limit. But what you've said, we have found that to be true amongst anglers that get to fish a lot, is they kind of have their own rules on their boat about releasing big fish or only keeping a few fish to take home. What is our need today? Those are responsible anglers, and I appreciate hearing from those folks that they're doing that we just like to go catch fish. When we need to eat a few, we take a few. Otherwise, we leave them in the system.
Now, Scott, the only problem that I see and that I've heard from friends of mine is that they don't want to get in the – do what?
You're blessed, Mike. I said, if you only heard of one problem, you're blessed. I can't imagine.
Well, it gets into the snapper scenario. You know, yeah, we were happy. It was fine. They dropped it down to 10, and we were fine with that. And then they dropped it down to whatever it was, 8 a person or 7 or whatever, and we was okay with that. And then you get down to where you catch one, and you get no season. And, you know, that's what people are more concerned about. You start dropping it down and doing these things, then you never get it back. I mean, once you drop it, or you have a you don't get to fish in November, then next year it's going to be you don't get to fish August, September, October, November, and you know it's that kind of stuff that people are concerned about, that once you start doing a little bit, you just keep taking more and more and more and more, and then you get around to where, say, dead gum, we used to be able to go out and catch fish, now we can't do anything anymore. I mean, that's the concern that I'm hearing about all this.
Sure, it's the turning the pot up slowly, and I want to avoid that. And when I have these meetings with the public, that's why I have had some concerns about reducing the bag limit, because for that very reason, if you take it away, it's harder to use the science to give it back to you. If you're not catching your limit now, let's not worry too much about the bag limit and let those fish get bigger because moving the bottom end up will allow more fish in the system, and initially you'll reduce the bag limit because you're not catching as many fish because it's harder to catch that bigger fish. Well, eventually it should get to be where it gets to be more common to catch those fish, and you'll see more people start moving up the number of fish that they're keeping because there's more fish and bigger fish. So I agree with you. It is difficult to give things back when it's taken away. That's why we want to meet with the public and the different participants in these fisheries to make sure that we're getting a big picture view. We're hearing from the people that are out there, and we may need to make some very difficult decisions with flounder more so than trout. We can be more cautious with trout. Flounder, we just have to make some real difficult decisions to continue to participate in that fishery.
Yeah, there's a lot of anecdotes to this, and I want to get to a couple of them. Number one, this idea on trout, after the oil spill, when it opened back up, that year was fantastic. And people say that's because, went for months and months and months with no angling impact and really no net impact either. So that's part of the discussion. But also, and this is just, I am not a scientist, not a marine biologist. I'm interested in that kind of stuff, but I'm a guy that's been in the outdoors my whole life. And I look at those speckled trout this way, and tell me if this lines up, that when you work on the bottom end, and this is why I worry about the bottom end size limit, there's no guarantee when I turn back that 15-inch or 14-inch trout going forward that it's ever going to get to be a 5-pound, 6-pound, 7-pound sow trout that lays a bunch of eggs. There's no guarantee. A lot of things could happen. I mean, the second I release that fish, a dolphin could eat it. It could get eaten by anything else. A ton of things could happen. But once that trout gets big, it's now run that gauntlet. It's gone through that funnel. And now it's shown that it is a resource that produces a bunch more trout. Don't you do a lot more good on the top end than the bottom end, or is that not right?
Well, because our surveys, and again, none of our systems are perfect. That's why we kind of have to look at what the surveys are showing us, what the science says, and then what people are seeing. In our catch surveys, only about 3% of the trout that are being kept are over that 22-inch limit. So, like you said, people aren't putting those bigger ones back in. Mm-hmm. But if you just do the math on the numbers of younger fish, that if you turn that 13, 14, 15-inch fish loose, that they go back in the system, you are right. There's always a predator out there, but it's a numbers game. If you can keep more numbers in there, more numbers will survive. And on the flounder side, we are also working on our flounder program at our Claude Petit Mariculture Center, and our goal that within sometime in the year 2020 that we're going to be putting about 50,000 to 60,000 one-inch flounder back into the system, and that's a potential true stock enhancement. So, again, single-digit survival rate, but any survival rate is better than what we're having now, adding fish into the system. So I do agree with you that those bigger ones have run the gauntlet and have laid a lot of eggs. There is a little bit of argument that we'll take them out and let somebody else have the opportunity, but right. It's all about the numbers.
Yeah, and how long can they do that? That's the part I don't know. When you get a 5-pound trout, which is, I know everybody, they think they catch 5-pound trout all the time. They don't. When you catch real 5-pound on the digital scale and up trout, you're looking at a, not a unicorn, but a rarity, one that's run the gauntlet. And if that fish can live for years and years after, now there's way fewer predators for a fish that size than a 14-inch fish. It seems like the idea with what I saw with redfish, right, with making the slot limit. And I'd rather we not have to make any changes, but I see, sure. And I know redfish aren't the same as speckled trout, but that sure has been a boon for redfish. Our redfishing is better than it's ever been in my lifetime.
I think so, and that's why – again, with trout, it's not critical, so we can make a smaller, not as difficult change. But again, the support is there for a slot limit, and I'm not opposed to that slot limit. I think that turns anglers into very responsible anglers, much to the degree that you said you and your friends and some of the others who participate on a pretty regular basis. They're already doing that.
Well, I'd rather, and if we have to make any sacrifice here on speckled trout, like you're talking about, I don't want to reduce the limit, because this is what Mike was talking about as well. I think, the idea that you go and if you're lucky enough to be able to fish every week and a couple times a week, that's right. You can go catch a couple fresh trout and have fresh fillets and not. But a lot of folks, got a whole bunch of things on their list, and maybe they only get to fish speckled trout 3 times a summer. four times a summer. I hate it for them, but they get to, and so they're going to want to keep those 10 fish to get those 20 fillets.
That's correct. And that's why, again, I have some reluctance in lowering a bag limit, but we want to do what's best for the fishery and what, to a certain extent, what the public wants. And now, that doesn't mean that's the best answer sometimes, but you are right. We do want to give people an opportunity. It costs a lot of money to make a fishing trip of any type. Mm-hmm. Okay? So we want to make it the best trip we possibly can. So I think we're going to get to continue to have great trout fishing here in Alabama. I think we're going to get to where we're going to have some bigger fish in the system by making some adjustments, and we're going to make sure that we're not reducing the biomass out there. And again, flounder's a little different story because I think they're just in trouble, and we have to make some very difficult decisions. But we hope that we give it back. I tell people that triggerfish is one of those that I hope that we get to give some triggerfish back in the near future because it was we're down to one fish, and that's a struggle.
Yeah, from pictures I saw from my friends, it took a total of about 5.5 minutes for everybody on the boat to catch their big trigger and get done.
See, that's what I'm afraid of, and I think that's what a lot of people
difference
afraid
is,
of.
This is not federal. I will say this. Yeah. This is in state hands.
Yeah, I understand that, but that's still, they've got such a sour taste in their mouth mm-hmm. from the snapper and the grouper and the amberjack and the triggerfish that they are just, they don't want any change. They don't want anything. I mean, they see what can happen. Once you take something away from somebody, you never, ever get it back, it looks like, to most people.
Yeah, and that's correct. And that's why these public meetings have been so important, that at least when people leave the meeting, they've seen what we present and we have this open dialogue, they at least don't look at us as, you're just the government trying to take something from me. Probably the best compliment I've had in all of this is a person said, Scott, you wouldn't come do this if you didn't care because you could just make the decision. And I said, that is true. But I do care about what the people say, and I care very much about the fishery. And so we want to make the best decisions for the fishery. And they're not always easy, and they're not always going to make everyone happy. But we want to hear what people have to say, and they need to know that we're not government. We're people. We're Kevin and Scott and John and the guys that do the assessment that we want things to be healthy for our fisheries here in Alabama.
Hey, before we wrap up, I just got one more. This is now away from speckled trout and flounder and a snapper question for you. Because our snapper season opening on June 1st, right? Saturday night, right. Or Saturday, 12:01.
Scott June Bannon 1st. Says, that's Derby Day.
Yes, Derby Day. Get ready.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, I remember that.
But I saw, you know, Mississippi released that there, and I've tried to explain on the air during the other shows during the week to folks how that works. They said, how can they start earlier? And I said, that's what, you know, states having the right to allocate days is. But with Mississippi opening a week or so earlier, tell me the rules for, obviously you have to get an out-of-state fishing license, but let's walk through. You and I know each other. So I want to go fishing Memorial Day weekend and fish Mississippi. What do I have to do to be legal as an Alabama resident?
Sure. You go and you purchase a license for Mississippi, a non-resident license, whether it's a trip license or an annual license. And then you register in their Tails and Scales program, and you'll get a number, a hail-out number, to go fishing. Now, you can leave from whichever state, but you need to return to the state of Mississippi and put your boat back on the trailer and land those fish in Mississippi, and then you report back in their system. It's relatively simple. It's very similar to snapper check, and then you trailer those fish back to Alabama. If you've met all those requirements, you're legal. You cannot come into Alabama while we're closed, and that's historically we have not done that. We've done it under the EFP to make sure that people are landing the fish in the state that's open so that they're counted in those states. Mississippi has a check-in, check-out system, similar, you know, snapper check has a check-in system, but some of the other states do not, like Florida. So there's no way to report those fish other than to make yourself available to be surveyed by landing in that state. As we move forward, you know, those rules may change, but right now, if Alabama is closed, you have to land it in the state that's open.
Right, right. So, and I want to get to another part of that question in a second, but if I did what you just said, and using the hail out, hail in number, and I make my report to Mississippi, and you and our buddies, you come over to my house, and my boat's sitting there in the yard at Dolphin Island, and you say, hey, what would you do today, and check the cooler. As long as I have that report from Mississippi, I'm good with you, right?
That's correct. You can show that you legally participated in that fishery. You're good. And I'm glad you got to go fish.
Okay. than the other part of it.
And you probably fished off the coast of Alabama.
Well, that's what I, okay, yeah, you knew what I was about to ask. So I go, and I don't even want to give that the name of the launch that I will use, the first one in the Mississippi, but it's out there. Y'all can Google it. And so I'll use that launch. I'll run out through Mississippi because I've got to put it back on the trailer there anyway. So I'll run out, and do I get out 9 miles and I can hang a left turn?
Correct. As long as you're outside of 9 miles, now you can transit
federal water.
Fish on, you can run out. But as soon as you're outside of 9 miles, you can fish outside of 9 miles in any state, Florida to Texas.
Right. And then if I'm coming back in, do I need to do the old stay 9 miles, beyond 9 miles out till I get to Mississippi, lined up Mississippi, and then turn and come in?
That's correct.
Okay. See, that's good, because that's what a lot of people are wondering. We're going to have to get you back on and talk more about this. Remind folks, if they want to get more information about these meetings or about the Facebook page, where do they go to get more intel?
Go to outdooralabama.com and sign up to get our press releases, and we'll send you information all the time, and go to our Alabama Marine Resources Facebook page.
As always, we appreciate your time. Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, we'll talk soon.
Thanks, guys. Love the fishing.
Thank you, Scott.